Welcome to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Hello. Hello and welcome to episode number 121 of the Self-Help Podcast with me, Edla, and Sean. How are you doing, Sean?
Did you hurt your knee then?
No, I didn't. Well, did it sound like it did?
It did, yeah.
Yeah, it's alright. I'm tougher than I look. How's Trix? You okay?
Very good. Good. I'm stunning.
Yeah, me too. As am I. This week we're talking about... What's the title this week? That's last week's title. I haven't even changed it. What are we talking about this week, Sean?
We're talking about how do you approach somebody who's got an issue. We're going to talk primarily about depression.
Yeah.
But it could be all kinds of issues. How do you approach people? How do you open a conversation with someone when it's a difficult topic and you need maybe to help them see something?
Yep.
Or you need to help them change something or move on.
Uh-huh.
And you don't know whether they're going to turn around and smack him in the mouth when you ask them. It's that kind of thing, isn't it?
So have your shoes on for a start, but yeah, we'll come to that.
Yeah.
We'll come to that. Okay, yeah, that's it. I remember now. It's all coming back
you're
to
there.
Me.
You're focused.
I'm in the zone.
You're living in the present.
Big time. Always. Yeah. Always. Actually, little thing I've been doing of late. I thought I'd experiment with cutting out coffee from my life.
All right, yeah.
I never mentioned this on the show yet.
No, yeah. I know that you've been off the coffee for the last couple of weeks. So.
Probably a month now, I guess.
Yep.
So it's not, I'm not a heroin addict or anything, so I'm not saying it was that hard. It's quite easy, really, because I'd heard people, get massive headaches and stuff from giving up caffeine. And I was only ever, a two-cup-a-day man. I wasn't really hardcore. But I just thought I'd give it a go, see what happens, because I need to get a blood test as well to see if it's had an effect on my cholesterol.
Right.
Which I have a little issue with. But anyway, I was fine. I didn't have any side effects or anything, really. But I have noticed, and there's no real way I can back it up, that I feel much fresher in the mornings.
Right.
So I think once I got over that 3-5 day initial kind of period of adjustment, I feel much more alert in the mornings, and I think it's because I'm not relying on that bit of caffeine just to kind of bump start me.
Yeah.
I'm just getting it naturally. There's no real way, like I say, I can test it. But yeah, I found that quite interesting. That'd be worth a go, because I was just doing it out of habit more than anything.
But it's like when I do my detox, 13-day detox, and everything comes out coffee, alcohol, chocolate, tea, everything's gone for those 13 days. And the effect on you says it's amazing. And the thing that I always acknowledge is the amount of energy that I've got.
Right.
I mean, they reckon it takes something like 35% of your body's energy to digest food.
Oh, blimey. I couldn't believe that. I've never mentioned this, but I've been reading about fasting and intermittent fasting as well.
Yeah.
Someone, a Guardian article, had gone 11 days without eating anything, just on water and tea.
We used to do that when I lived in the communities. There were six of us, and in teams of six, and we would look after each other so that every sixth week you'd have a week's fast.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and the others would look after you. And that would mean that you'd kind of wind down our food, spend a few days on fluids, come back up again.
Yeah.
That's
some interesting stuff. Yeah, the lady that wrote this thing said basically after the first couple of days of missing the sugar and stuff that was lacking from her life, all of a sudden she started to feel quite incredible, actually, and all of a sudden had this energy, and she lost a lot of weight. All the toxins were kind of released from her body, and it's almost as if all the bad stuff was eaten up and used as an energy source.
Yeah.
So, you've got to get your doctor's approval and all that stuff, yada, yada, yada. But
yeah.
That's maybe the next step for me to have a little play with.
It's interesting, on TV at the moment, you've got Jamie Oliver. He has his crusades. He's got a crusade on sugar at the moment.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that's the war on sugar's building momentum, I think, isn't it?
Yeah.
Something I'm quite aware of. But coffee for me is down.
Yeah.
So, yeah, little tip for you. Give it a go if you can. Give it a whirl. Give it a whirl. All right. liveinthepresent.co.uk is our website, is it not, Sean?
I hope so. That's the one I've been using,
Remember to renew the domain name. Head over there for show notes and links, things we're about to talk about, which I'm sure there will be plenty. Lots of cool resources on there as well. Should we dive into this week's show?
Yeah.
Because we had an email from Jill, a listener of ours, and... long story short, she was obviously showering us with praise and hugs.
She's a wonderful woman, Jill.
Yeah, how much she loves
very perceptive, I thought.
Tells all her friends, changed her life beyond measure. All that stuff, all the usual stuff. We get so many emails, goodness.
Every day.
No, we do appreciate that. But yeah, Jill said,
good.
My main request would be a podcast on how to cope living with someone with depression when they really don't seem to want or seem to be able to help themselves, which I thought was quite interesting. So we will help you, Jill, we will attempt to. Because I imagine it's something that faces a lot of people, maybe either living with someone, a partner or a friend or a
yep.
someone you share a flat with or whatever.
Yeah.
Where you can see that they're struggling with certain things in life, but you don't quite know how to broach the subject or how to...
Well, I think that we got two things going on here. I think we need to come back to depression in a minute. And I think what we need to look at, first of all, is how do you begin to address people when you've got to say something to somebody, but you don't know how to say it.
Right.
Yeah.
You don't need to mention any specific examples, but you're probably the go-to guy in various departments.
Well, lots of organisations, because of the role that I play when I've been in them, when there's been a problem, you know, where someone has got inappropriate behaviours or habits or they smell or something.
The book is passed to
Yes,
Sean.
It's Sean. Could you go and tell that person? Could you go and communicate with
them? Could you go and tell that 7-foot, 300-pound fella that he's got a bit of an odour issue?
Yes, right, yeah. Change your socks. Yeah. Yeah, and that stuff's always kind of difficult to do.
Even for a professional like yourself.
Yeah, but you have to pick your moment, you've got to get it right. And it depends on what the issue is. Sometimes you can do the trick where you say to somebody, it may just be me, you know, maybe you might need to check it out with other people, but I've got a feeling that that your feet are a bit whiffy, you know. Could just be me and my nose, you know, maybe you need to kind of check it out.
Yeah.
You know, so that you're not saying you stink, but you're kind of, you're kind of just diluting it a bit. Or it could be that if someone is kind of grossly overweight or something, that you could approach it from the point of view of, you know, I'm really concerned about you because, you know, I like you very much. You know, you're a really special person to me and I'm really worried about you.
Okay.
You know, that kind of thing. So
this is where something I want to mention is more the empathetic response rather than the sympathetic or the straight in your face, you're fat.
Yeah. As soon as you start to say to people, in fact, I worked with a lady who was very big and her surgeon said to her, because he had to do some stuff on her, he said, how old's your daughter? And she said, 10. And he said, well, if you want to see her 11th birthday, lose some weight, was what he said. And it was like, okay, all right. Yeah, and it's a bit kind of on the nose, isn't it? You have to be careful about how you approach people.
Yep.
Because one of the problems is, it's our old friend Coué's law of reversed effort, is that if you say the wrong thing in the wrong way, you create more of the problem.
Yes.
Yeah, so what you feed grows, and you're actually feeding the problem, so it gets bigger.
Yeah. Separating yourself even further.
Yeah, and making the person feel worse. Because if their behaviour, and many difficult behaviours are based on the fact that someone is feeling bad anyway, therefore they develop the bad behaviour as a coping mechanism.
Yeah, smoking, eating. Yeah,
you've just driven them further into the problem.
Blimey.
So you have to be careful about how you approach it.
So think it through first, yeah.
And that's true about depression as well.
Okay.
Yeah, so let's just start off with kind of what's depression. Depression primarily is a chemical state in the brain that can either be produced by negative repetitive thoughts or it can be a clinical chemical issue, either end of a tube. Yeah. If it's a clinical issue, all you can do with it is medicate. Yeah, there may need to be psychotherapy alongside that underneath the medication, but without the medication you can't shift the energy.
Yeah.
That's number one, yeah. If you look at why is somebody depressed, well, there are three areas that I see that I identify depression with people. The first one would be repressed anger, that someone is really angry with themselves or with other people, maybe their boss, maybe a partner, whatever, and they can't express it. They can't let it out. So they hold it inside, and you can see it, and they grip their jaw, and some very often they'll grind their teeth, that kind of thing. And you can see the muscle development in the jaw sometimes.
Hmm.
And the person is holding it and holding it and holding it in. And that energy in the end turns against them. So it becomes self-destructive. It's like having pus inside you. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. The second one is a reactive depression, that I'm depressed because something has happened. You know, I've just lost a leg. I've just lost a person. I've just lost my job. You know, I mean, there is a cause, and then there's a response, which is the depression. And then when you get it right, there's a treatment, there's a cure, and thank you very much, off you go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so reactive depressions are much easier to deal with than clinical depressions.
Okay.
Yeah, and repressed angers are easier to deal with than clinical depression as well. But if somebody is clinically depressed, their chemistry is out and they haven't got any energy. So the classic symptoms of all kinds of depression would be the mitochondria in your cells, which are the energy packs, start to close down, and you start to feel like your body's leaden. You feel like you've got heavy legs. You know, it's an effort to do everything. And someone in the depth of depression will recoil right the way back to the bedroom, into the bed, pull the duvet up, sod off, leave me alone.
Mm.
Okay? And the issues of motivation are really, really difficult. It's really, really hard.
It's going to create a bit of a vicious circle that as well, then, depending on how long it goes on for.
Yeah, and there's a whole load of issues. I mean, we at some point, someone has asked me recently whether we would do another one on sleep. And we need to look at sleep and depression. But when people sleep for longer periods of time, they reinforce the depression.
Yeah.
And part of treatment is to reduce the sleep cycle.
Wow.
So they stop dreaming so much, because some of the dreams are part of the problem. The issue with... And this is an important thing to say. If anybody...
Well, then say it.
Anyone is dealing with anyone who's got depression... Right. If someone is in the depth of depression, they're inert. Yeah, they wouldn't be suicidal because they haven't got the energy to be suicidal. But there's a classic problem when you're working with people that are in very deep depression. If they start to come out of it, so they're starting to just come out from the bottom of the pit and they're starting to work their way back up, they get enough energy where they could do it. So actually, one of the most dangerous times for people that are really deeply depressed is when they start to get better. When they're very depressed, they haven't got any energy to do anything negative with themselves. As they start to pick up, that's when the problem begins.
To do that terrible thing, okay, yeah.
So if you are working with anyone who is depressed and you're helping them sort themselves out, you have to be very, very aware of that kind of thing. Yeah, and obviously, if you can get doctors involved and all that kind of stuff, then it's really, really important.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
I suppose the last thing I'd say before we plunge into the kind of things that you could say, is that if you've got someone who's depressed, they're depressed because they're ruminating on their own depressions, whatever they are. Okay? And if you then start trying to talk about the depression and jolly them out of it, all you're doing is reinforcing the depression.
Okay.
Yeah. And sometimes the easiest thing to do is to not have nothing to do with the depression, but to try and engage someone in something that's vaguely positive.
Okay.
So that we're diverting away from the depressive process into something that is more positive. And that takes quite a bit of work, but you don't talk about the depression.
Okay.
You talk about the positive, not the negative.
I like it.
Yeah.
I've got an article or a video that I've been dying to share. In fact, I might have mentioned it a few months ago. In fact, I'm pretty sure I did, but it's relevant for this show. It's only a few. It's like a 3-minute long little YouTube clip, and it's animated over a talk, which it's basically about the differences between empathy and sympathy.
Yeah.
And how you should focus on empathy when dealing with something rather than being sympathetic, because by being empathetic, you bring yourself to that person's level.
Yeah, you walk in their shoes.
Exactly, rather than just shouting down from the hole, which is one of the kind of analogies it uses.
Yeah.
Say, how's it going down there? That kind of thing.
Yeah.
Beautiful little video, which I suggest everyone checks out, because I've watched it a few times in the last couple of months. It's just magical.
Yeah.
But I think that's an important step to take when dealing with the person's got an issue.
Yeah.
You've
got to be there with them. One of the worst things you can ever do to anybody who's in any situation, depression, anxiety, whatever, is, oh, for God's sake, pull yourself together, don't be stupid.
Yeah.
You know, just get up and get on with it.
Mm.
You know, that kind of thing. That just makes life worse.
It's not a good call to do that.
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so we're going to go through some points, are we, Sean?
Yeah. Yeah, one of the things, this is a Psych Central blog site, which I put the... link up for. Looking at six ideas here. So the first idea is positive things to say to people. And what they're saying here is that to acknowledge that the person has got a problem, and the phrase they use here is, you're right, this sucks.
Okay.
You know, so we're not saying, come on, don't be stupid, it's better. We're acknowledging, yeah, this is crap, isn't it?
All right, so you don't just say, yeah, it's not that bad. There's people dying all over the world. Get your police.
That's not a good
idea.
That always makes me laugh, that I get that in organisations where someone goes to the manager complaining because they've got problems, they're stressed, and the manager doesn't say, oh, what can we do about that? The manager says, you think you've got problems, look what I've got to do.
Yeah, look at my pile of papers here, look at all these emails I've got to get.
And my life's worse than yours. Yeah. One of the points it makes here in the Psych Central thing is about, as a generalisation, as I say, as a generalisation, men tend to be problem solvers, and women tend to be listeners. So the issue is that someone says they're depressed, and the man's like, okay, come on, what can we do about it? And the woman is more likely to sit down and say, okay, well, tell me about it. What's going on? So, and very different approaches. And to acknowledge that, yeah, you've got a problem, but actually be able to listen to it and hear is a very, very important thing.
Yeah.
And that's empathy, really. Because then you're getting alongside the person. You're starting to walk in their shoes with them, starting to feel.
But once you're in there, then you can start to work your way out together.
Yeah, but that's the point, is that you come out together. Because point number two is, you don't walk this path alone. You know, I'm here with you. I'm here if you need me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because when people are in a depressed state, very often life has become meaningless. They feel like nobody really cares or nobody understands, and they feel very isolated and alone. So for someone to be able to acknowledge, you know, you're not alone, I am here with you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that isn't like, don't be bloody stupid, I am here with you. You have to be empathic with that. You know, you have to actually be there with the person.
Yeah.
Yeah. There are times when clients are suicidal, very depressed, and it's a case of making sure there's coping mechanisms in place so they know what to do if they feel bad.
Okay.
Yeah, but there would also be situations as therapists where we might need to check in with clients every couple of days or something. How are you doing? You okay? You give them a call, that kind of stuff. If someone is near the edge.
Yep.
Yeah. But the issue is, you're not alone. You know, you're here, you know, and we're here with you, kind of thing.
Yeah, or simple, just a little message here and there, just to, throughout the day, just to say hello and how you doing, that kind of thing.
One of the number three on their list here is that you say to somebody things like, you know, no, I believe in you, I do believe in you. And that they use a phrase here, which is a good American phrase, which is, you're awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, now the thing is, if you're depressed and you're feeling really bad and down and horrible, and someone comes along and says, I think you're really lovely, then the depressed person is like to think, well, you must be a bloody idiot then. Because if you think this is, you know, I'm lovely, I'm horrible, this is a foul place to be, you know.
Yeah.
And getting that kind of balance right between giving someone some self-esteem and giving them that, yes, there is worth, I believe you can do this, I believe it's going to happen, is a really important place to be. I think that telling someone who's really down in the dumps, you're awesome, you might just get the reverse response, I think.
Yeah, so we question that one a little bit.
Yeah, I'm not so sure about that one.
Okay.
Yeah, but trying to kind of reaffirm that someone is worth the skin they stand up in.
Yep.
You know? Number four, I think this is probably the most important phrase out of all of them. If someone feels that they're alone and that there's nothing they can do about it, and they feel kind of helpless or victimised, that kind of stuff, then for someone to say to you, okay, I am here with you. What can I do? What would you like me to do? What would help? What could I do now that would make this better?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it may start off with, I don't know. But it you're starting to open a door.
Yeah.
Because you're actually offering something in. What can I do to help you?
Yeah. Yeah? I know they don't know. You can maybe then invite a few suggestions, can't you?
Yeah.
As simple as let's go get a drink, or let's go get go for a cup of coffee. Decaf.
Yeah. Decaf, yeah. Don't headaches in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that so number five on here is, I'm here for you if you want to talk, walk, go shopping, get a bite to eat.
Yeah,
yeah, it's that very thing, isn't it? It's what can I do for you? How can I help?
It's the whole thing about, well, but at some point you may want to suggest that that person gets help from a person like yourself, but it's not that's not your initial call, Sean. Or call, you need counselling. It's like, you know, I'm with you. And then
sometimes people that are in those kind of states, And they're down and flat and depressed. Feel when they're kind of sent to someone like me, they can come as though it's a punishment.
Mm.
You know, they're being punished.
Yeah, for, yeah.
You know, in the occupational health department, you know, I'll send you to occupational health. You know, that kind of feeling that you're being punished in some way.
Yeah.
And that's quite important. I do quite often say to people, if they've been referred by managers, you know, are you here because you want to be here? Because the idea about one volunteer is 10 pressed men, they used to say.
And it's, you must be able to tell as soon as you meet the guy the first time.
Yeah, but sometimes people are quite hostile.
Yeah. Kind of body language-wise, just slumped way back in the seat, not really, no eye contact, that kind of thing.
Yeah. So the I can remember someone saying to me once, sitting down in a concern room and saying, so you're a good communicator. Go on then, communicate with me then. Go on, communicate with me. Go on.
To which he said, I can't remember.
Sod off. Yeah. Yeah, but if something is forced on someone, especially if they're in that depressed state, you make the situation worse.
Well, yeah, that's what it comes down to. Yeah, the initial kind of question is you can't.
Yeah.
You can take a horse to, what is it? What's the phrase? You can make a horse drink, but you can't.
You can take a horse to water, but you can't make it drink.
That's it.
That's the one.
That's the podcast summed up in a.
Yeah, I think it was Dorothy Parker that said, you can take a horticulture, but you can't make her think.
Nice.
Bit sexist, but she was a woman.
Yeah.
Yeah, one more on this list, yeah.
Mm.
And this one, I kind of understand it, but it's one that is a bit tricky because you could only use it at a certain point in a process, I think.
Yep.
It's this idea about what it actually says is, yeah, I know it's hard to see this right now, but this is only temporary. Yeah. Mm. When you're in the depth of depression, you feel like you're in the dark in a tunnel. And if there is a light at the end of the tunnel, then it's the headlight on an oncoming train. It's not a good thing, you know. And the idea that someone says, yeah, go on, yeah, this is going to pass. You have to be very, very careful about that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And if it feels like it's an endless black hole, yes, you need to shine the light in. But if you can distract people enough to get a bit of light in, then you can start to say things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it's a bit tricky, some of those things.
Yeah, so a couple of them need to be looked at closely, but some good points there. Yeah, very nice.
Yeah. I think that both anxiety and depression are huge things in our society, and I think that many, many more people than we would acknowledge suffer from both anxiety and depression.
Yep.
Yeah. And in some places, it used to be like one in four, then one in three, and some places it's one in two. But people are taking antidepressants of some sort or another. You know, and we know that people that eat carbohydrates to get more serotonin, to raise their mood up, but then they put on weight.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I was watching a programme called Our Guy in India, which is a Channel 4 thing. And I think it'll be on the 4OD player or whatever it's called now. It's about Guy Martin, who's a motorbike rider, but he's a mechanic as well. And he's a bit of a character, so he's a really cool fellow. But he's travelling around India. Meeting guys at one point in the slums, you know, and you see these people who've got nothing but are happy and they don't need anything. It's almost as if they're immune to depression and anxiety.
Yeah.
But, I mean, knowing about those things isn't necessarily going to help someone over here with depression at all,
no.
Is it?
No. I think the thing that underlies the work that we do, and all the things we're talking about here about depression are all real. One of the things that anybody can do who is depressed or potentially depressed or is trying to keep themselves emotionally and mentally healthy is mindfulness. Doing the meditative, the headspace, one moment meditation, doing any of our stuff. It's all about being able to be the person who's in control of your emotions rather than your emotions being in control of you. You know, and even when I'm working with people with quite severe bipolar, people that do mindfulness, their mood comes up and their level of medication goes down.
Yep.
You know, it works. It's good.
Go. It does work, this stuff. Okay, cool. Cool. Anything else you'd like to mention?
No, no, I'm okay with that. Are you okay with that?
Yeah, have you got a resource? Yeah. I know there's nothing on
there. Well, no, what the resource that I've got here, because I think it's quite fascinating, and I think that this, again, is a reflection of the levels of depression in society, is if you've got an iPhone or you've got an Android, go to your app store and just type in depression and see what you get back. Yeah, because there are so many apps out there which are about how can we help you, how can you continually remind yourself to be better, to continually monitor what's going on, your thought patterns, your emotions, your feelings. Loads and loads of stuff out there.
Yeah.
And there's two sides to that. One is, isn't it amazing that it's there to use? But the other side of it is, wow, isn't it extraordinary that we've needed to create all these apps?
Mm.
Yeah? Yeah. And it just describes the level of the problem for me.
Indeed. Yeah. Indeed, yeah. But I also wonder about the level of the role of technology in...
Whether it makes people depressed.
Yeah.
There's lots of evidence growing at the moment about the idea that the level of apparatus that we're all using, all these tablets and phones and things, is creating a sense of autism.
Mm.
We're losing social skills on the basis of more kind of technological skills.
Yeah. Yeah, I can believe that. But there's plenty of articles saying that we're all kind of super social now. In fact, we are communicating with people around the world on a daily basis.
Is that communication? Is it communication?
Well, it's a form of communication. I'm not saying it's good or bad.
We'll only know over time, won't we?
We will. Yeah. It's like the whole, me with the coffee. If you Google how to... getting rid of caffeine, there's loads of articles saying 20 ways lack of caffeine or reduced caffeine will help you in your life, but then it's on the exact reverse. It's kind of 20 ways caffeine's great for you, so
it's good for your heart and your brain.
Yeah.
I was reading a thing the other day that was said something like, if you have a strong cup of coffee, it takes 25 glasses of water to flush it through your system. I don't know what the basis of that is, but I thought that's interesting.
I've had one cup. There's like a lounge area in my office building on the ground floor where you can have meetings and stuff. And excuse me, the coffee there is amazing. So I did have a cappuccino because I couldn't resist.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I did. I did go for it one day. But hey ho,
yeah,
you'll let me do that, won't you? Sure,
I will.
Don't judge me too harshly. Okay, cool.
Yeah, good.
Oh, I've mentioned my resource, which is the video I mentioned, the RSA one about empathy, sympathy, is by the RSA. And they've got a YouTube channel full of cool other things like that, so I just suggest go and dive into it, because it's some amazing little... There are like 5 to 10 minute clips.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yep.
Keep on learning, eh, folks?
Sounds good to me.
All right, lovely. And next week, we're talking about play and why adults... Yeah.
Why do adults stop playing?
Yeah. This is related to stuff, probably. Why do adults like laugh less than kids? What is it?
Yeah.
Kids laugh like 300 times a day, adults like 8.
10. 300 times a year.
Well, yeah, yeah. Do the math.
Yeah.
Why do adults stop playing? We'll talk about that one.
Sounds good.
Okay, cool. Yeah. In the meantime, livingthepresent.co.uk for all the show notes and links. Check us out on Twitter, Facebook. Reset up a Instagram, Live in the Present Instagram page, which you should look at. I think it's LITP now. It definitely is, actually. We're all over the show online, aren't we?
Yep.
Drop us an email. Let us know what you think. Right, yeah. Sean.
And any ideas for episodes?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Send us emails, anything you'd like to talk about.
Okay.
We aim to please, don't we?
We do.
We squeeze them in. Cool, right, you take it easy, Sean.
And you. See ya. Bye.
See you, everyone.